Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to today's call on December 18th. On the line we have Jim, Naoki, Jody, Nishit, Takao, and myself, Steve Shang. And the proposed agenda for the call is continue the discussion of the data elements and any other business. With that, Jim, over to you.
Thank you, Steve. Okay. I see you changed the date on the Adobe Connect. That's good. Okay. First, let me say thank you to Vikal, who did the comparison against the EWD document and identified a set of things that are in the EWD document but missing in the list that we're working with. So I think we'll just hold on to that for now, and let's not lose track of that. I did have a question for you, Takao, though. The URL of Internet Complaint Site, I guess that hadn't jumped out at me before, and so that was new to me. Could you or somebody say a little something about what that is exactly?
My understanding is there's any issues there have to be some URL that you can go to and then file a claim or stuff like that. So that was my understanding. Let me check again.
Okay, so thank you, Takao. You're very faint. I don't know if others are having trouble hearing you, but you seem extremely far away, notwithstanding the fact that you are far away.
I'm using a new headset, so maybe something wrong with it.
Okay, actually, at that moment you sounded a little bit better, so that was helpful if you were a little closer to the mic maybe. Yeah, Internet Complaint Site. I guess I hadn't noticed that particular thing before. Is there a standard Internet Complaint Site? Does anyone know, or is you're just supposed to create every registrar supposed to have something?
Jim, this is Steve. My understanding was kind of a standard complaint site, where if a consumer of the Whois find the information is inaccurate or something, they could file a report here.
This is a data accuracy thing.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't want to drag that out. I can also just go look it up myself and find out. I suppose I thought it would be a relatively easy question. Okay. Thank you to Cal. It's good to know that we have actually a relatively short list of things that were in EWG that were not in the list that we're working in, so that's a good thing. We'll obviously want to track carefully where EWG goes with all of this stuff. We have in our notes, we've been drafting some requirements as we go along here just to keep in mind as we review things. Just to quickly go over those again, the first requirement that we're working with is suggesting that the language or script should, for contact information address, so postal address information, should be appropriate for the region in which it is located. A second requirement is that for an email address, the local part should be a single language or script, and in the domain part, each label can be its own language or script. And of course, we need to make sure this complies. I'm pretty sure that it does, but we should double check with appropriate IETF standards. I remember a question from somebody in an email message about this, commenting about including requirements for It was, was it to Cal?
Hello?
Tim, yes, I think
Cal, who commented.
Naoki's comment about email address. The EAI standard has just been standardized, hasn't been used very extensively. You want to, Naoki can speak more about it?
Right, Naoki said that, but yeah, please go ahead, Naoki.
I commented about the internationalized email address, which is not so popular in the current internet.
Yes, I did see that, and I agree with that observation. I'm not sure what we would do with that observation. You know, I think that we're simply stating that if there are non-Latin characters in an email address, then, you know, it needs to be a single language or script, and according to the EAI standards. I don't think that that statement is affected by the popularity of the standard. Does anyone want to comment on that, add more context to that?
Hello?
Yes, please, go ahead.
Okay, so, no, I think what Alexander's point was that since it is not indeed, you know, used yet, so it seems to make sense that we always ask for ASCII address as well. That was what I understood at his point, no?
So you're suggesting that we should require that the address always be encoded?
No.
So that
My understanding was that if we are to collect data, we always ask for ASCII address as well. That now, please correct me if I'm wrong.
So ask for an ASCII address as well, meaning the encoded form or an alternate address?
Alternate address, that's my understanding. That's how I understood.
So, Naoki, is that what you're looking for? You're suggesting that the email address should always be multi-valued, meaning there should always be two of them, an ASCII address and a internationalized version?
I think internationalized email address is submitted. We also require the US ASCII address.
I mean, my reaction is that an encoded address is in ASCII. That's the point of the EAI standard, is to create a mapping to and from an ASCII-based version of an address and its internationalized version. I mean, I would be less inclined to suggest that we should always have two email addresses and instead suggest that the email address should always be stored and presented in its ASCII form. I mean, I'm not sure I agree with that, but I would prefer that to suggesting the email address is a multi-valued field. What do you think, Noki?
I think we need to research about email, international email.
So, may I?
Yes, please, Takao, go ahead.
So my understanding is that, I mean, Naoki-san's concern is that compatibility. If somebody enter email address and then that cannot be reached, that's not a good thing. But as Jimmy suggested, I believe that that my understanding is the same. It would work. So as long as it becomes a time to actually be able to enter such names, we shouldn't have a problem of using that non-ASCII alias or local part. So I don't believe that's an issue either.
Okay, let me try to say this back just to make sure I understand. I think what I'm hearing is concern that if we take in an internationalized address and that's what's stored and that's what's displayed, that address might not work because for those who have not implemented the EAI standards, they won't be able to directly use that address if it's an internationalized address, meaning it is composed of non-ASCII characters. Is that what folks are saying?
What I said was, yes. However, by the time that is actually used, it should actually be working with a fallback mechanism, I guess.
Well, I appreciate your optimism and confidence that it's going to be working by the time all of this is required. Count me in on that train. Please go ahead.
I'm sorry. My point was actually, the point that I wanted to make was that there we should. I don't. Two issues. One is I agree that I don't think that we need to require a second address in ASCII form only EAI address. So that's one. And then the other point was that we shouldn't be really. I don't think we need to talk about the restrictions of number of language or scripts and for that. As we, there are domains itself that have multi-scripts allowed. So if we say that it has to be a single script, a single language, there will be addresses that won't meet in that category. Like Japanese again, there will be get the domain that is with Chinese characters or Japanese characters, and then ASCII. That's allowed, and then that two scripts right there.
Right. So thank you for that. Actually, when I was looking for a comment about email addresses, I was remembering your comment to Cal that you had put in your email, and we got onto the Naoki's point here about whether or not the EAI standard was an appropriate choice. I still think that we'll have to visit the details of what this recommendation actually looks like, going back to Noki's point here for a moment. I still think that we somehow need to say that the email address needs to conform to the EAI set of standards. And of course, IDN standards. But to take Noki's point, it may be that we want to comment about the issue of usability in that recommendation, if not requirement. And that speaks directly to the point of, well, if we take in non-Latin email addresses, we do need to pay attention to the fact that they might not be usable directly. So that certainly is an issue to call out and make sure it's visible.
That makes sense to me.
So we can Yeah, we'll come back to the details of that when we once we. So let's make a note of that particular, you know, recommendation there, Steve, and that we've got that issue that we'll have to clarify when the time comes. And then to your point, Cal, which you had put in your email message. Yes, you're suggesting that we not say that an email address has to be in a single language or script. And I agree with you. I believe that there's, given that a domain name could have, well, each label has to have a single language or script. That's just part of the encoding process. But I don't think that we can say that an email address as a whole unit can have a single language or script, because a domain name, you know, all by itself can have different languages or scripts in each label. So, yeah, you're absolutely right, Cal, with your comment there that you had in your message. Okay, so getting on to your second comment then, Cal, you also made a comment that we don't have a clear understanding of the definition of common script for the registration data here. And we see Latin, you know, referenced as a common script. My response to that comment is, I think that this question, I think the question that you're asking, I believe that question is supposed to be answered by the translation and transliteration group. I think that we can reference the potential existence of a common script where it's important for us to do that and relevant for us to do that. But I don't think we have to define that, because as I understand it, that's what that translation and transliteration working group is supposed to do.
Okay.
I guess it would be obviously extremely important for us to pay attention and make sure that that's what that group does and is going to do. We should probably maintain, Steve, this question of what exactly is a common script and reference the fact that we expect this other group to answer it.
I took a note of it, Jim.
So if we do get ahead of this other group, if we have to say something about it, we, you know, remind ourselves that we have to do that.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, in our discussions, we talk a lot about the Latin versus non-Latin, and then. I think often we are actually talking about the ASCII as opposed to U.S. ASCII as opposed to Latin. So that was the point I just wanted to do.
Yes, I agree with that too, Takao. I mean, I guess my working assumption, if you will, when we say common script is that we're talking about U.S. ASCII. We're essentially talking about the de facto standard, if you will. I mean, who is supposed to be a U.S. ASCII-based protocol. All the data inside is that. I mean, no one's ever declared that that's what it is, but I think we kind of accept it as a given for now. Okay. And then, Tagal, you raised another good question here in item 3. What do we do about regions that are not listed in the member countries?
Yes. It may be okay. I was looking for some examples, but if it's not reachable, it may be okay not to be handled. But I just wanted to point that out.
So you offer Antarctica as an example of something which is not included in member countries in the UPU.
Right. So there anyone who would register a domain with that address, that was my question.
That's an interesting question.
I haven't asked Jody to look it up. With that address.
Could you ask that question again, Takao? I don't think I quite caught it.
I said that there's anyone that there have an address with the North Pole, for instance.
With a kind of trip.
Register the domain with that address, yeah, North Pole, for instance.
With the North Pole.
Yeah. That's where, you know, like remember we chatted about, for instance, how about Mars, you know?
Right. Right. I don't know. I can check, though.
Or even Antarctica, more generally, rather than just North Pole in specific. In the specific. But even if one exists, you know, I mean, that's an interesting data point that one exists. But it does bring, more generally, up the question of how one would validate the address if there are no rules about the address listed under UPU. I wonder if the EWG has taken notice of this and if it has found its way into any of their discussions. So I'm thinking I'm going to send a note to somebody who I know on the EWG and just raise this particular question, give them something to think about, especially since they're also dealing with the scope of issue, the data accuracy issue. Antarctica is not really a member country, and there are no rules about what things are supposed to look like. It certainly does make data accuracy an interesting problem. Okay. So I think those are the questions that have come up on the list so far. Anybody else want to ask a question or follow up on anything that we talked about last time before we jump into looking at some new data elements? Okay. So let's jump into looking at some new data elements. So we've gone through address. We've gone through email. And now I'm just having a little trouble moving around my own copy of this thing. Oh, there we go. I'm just moving it the wrong way. Okay. So I've gone through address. We've gone through email. And we talked about statuses. I don't think we talked about dates. Did we talk about dates?
I don't think so. We talked about phone numbers to use the UPU 163. I think that's what we talked about.
Right.
I don't think we talked about dates.
So the date standard. So let's jump in and talk about dates then. So yeah, we talked about address, email, phone and fax numbers, and we talked about statuses. So with respect to dates, I'm trying to remember what's in the IRD document, Steve.
The IRD document used the date to comply with the ISO 31.
Right, there's an ISO standard for the format of dates.
Yes.
So for display purposes, that's what the date would be.
Yeah, ISO 8601, 2004. So let me paste it in here. The the reference, let me...
So the question that comes up in my mind is, should we say anything about internal representation? For example, I guess what I'm thinking is that dates should always be stored in UTC or maintained in UTC, but displayed according to this ISO standard. Folks have any thoughts about that?
I mean, the ISO standard is used by EPP, I think. Let me just quickly check what the EPP used ISO standard. EPP is ICD2. So it would be contact. It would be 1531. Domain name address. So on that, Jim, I have two thoughts on that. One thought is, should this working group be considering setting requirements on the storage standards? Isn't that registry or registrar specific? Shouldn't we just be focusing on the transmission and display? Because that's where end users or consumers get to interact with the data. So that's kind of a high-level question. Regarding your question about the data and times, they would use... It would be able to show the correct UTC because it was a T or Z character at the end. Universal.
A TLZ character at the end.
Yeah. Here is the EPP standard, which is what this also uses. It's all daytime. Value is presented via EPP must be expressed in universal coordinate time using the Gregorian calendar.
Right.
So that's what this ISO standard also says.
Yeah, so that's probably the right thing to do. So it doesn't matter where you are looking at the data, you always just get the UTC date. And you can make that local if you need to or want to.
Yes. So that would be my feedback on this point.
Well, that seems like the right thing to me. You know, we just pull forward, just as we did with statuses, we pull forward what's in the EPP documentation. We should do the same thing for dates. Any comments?
I agree.
This is Jody. I agree, too.
Requirements, the standards for dates should use the relevant EPP standard in this area, right? In particular, that's RFC 5733, and then it's the ISO standard. Something like that, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right, good.
Okay, so let's jump to talking about name then. So organization personal names.
Hi, this is Nishit. Can you come in?
Yes, please, Nishit.
I was going through the final report of IRD group, working group, and in that I have looking at the way for internationalizing the date is in UTC at, as I did in RSP 3339, but here we are talking about RSP 5733. What are the difference between, can I ask, between these two RSPs?
Well, that's a good question. You should, yes, we should take a look at what the difference is between those two documents. Could you type those document numbers into the chat room over here on the side?
Sure.
Would you be willing to take as an action to check that out for us for next time?
Okay, I will definitely go through it.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Just,
thank you for...
I have just typed that.
Right. No, that's good. So thank you for noticing that. See if we can, we'll, you know, have to clarify that. Okay. So again, back to talking about names. Well, I'll put something out there. I think that with respect to names, that has to be pretty much open for a registrant to be able to type in whatever is appropriate for them. I believe that if we accept the principle that a registrant, you know, should be permitted to use their own local language or script for, you know, entering any registration data, it seems reasonable to me to allow them to put in their name in, you know, whatever form is considered normal to them. Not quite sure how I would phrase that in a recommendation. We'll have to give some thought to characterizing that, but so that's my suggestion. Any comments or questions, agreement, disagreement? So I'm going to take silence as agreement that,
yes,
with respect to names. I'm sorry, go ahead. Somebody wants to talk?
Hi, Jim. I'm trying to organize my thoughts. This is Jody. I believe that the customer or the registrant should be able to enter it in. I agree with you that they should be able to enter in their name in their local script slash language and whatever that may be. EPP does support allowing that customer to do that or that registrant and allowing it to be registered at the registry that way, I believe. I guess where the complications come in is how is that displayed in the current WHOIS system. And I don't know if that's what we're trying to solve, you know, how it's displayed in the WHOIS system or if that matters at the current time. I mean, our working group is only to what is the best way for the registrant to enter their information. Is that right?
That's an interesting question, Jody. You know, I'll give you my view on the answer. I think that the actual display is going to be decided by whatever protocol is used for the directory service itself. So I'm thinking about the weird stuff in particular in the IETF, given that it's built on, you know, HTTP, whatever language or script is used, it then depends on the client to be able to display it or not display it. The client can't display it, then they don't actually get to see what's there if they don't have the font set for it. So I believe that, and then on the input side, you know, we get to speak to what we think is expected for the data to come in. But I think that our real requirement, our work product, is to speak to whatever recommendation we think is relevant to the data that's going to offer the best set of options for how that data is handled from input to output. So I think it's all an open question for us. I mean, that's why I think when I had offered up a simplified proposal, it was partly intended to be, well, sort of an opening principle, a first principle, if you will. And we're sort of exploring how well that first principle works throughout the system. My first principle was that, you know, a registrant should be able to enter the data in whatever form is most comfortable to them, and the rest of the system has to maintain it in that way. When you go to use it, you do to it whatever you need to in order to use it. And I feel like the discussions that we're having are sort of testing the limits of that first principle. And so we're, you know, hardening or softening that requirement according to these categories that we're looking at. I don't know if that's helpful or does that confuse things for you, Jody?
I'm not sure yet, Jim. I agree with you as far as the registrant should be able to enter it in whatever script they're comfortable with, and it should be stored that way. And then it's up to the registrar, the registry, and the Whois system to actually be able to display that correctly or use it in whatever form that it needs to in order to conduct business I don't know, any other agencies that may want to look at that information. But what I would shy away from is requiring the registrar or the registry to do any kind of translation or transcription or or transliteration of that data.
So I agree with you on the transliteration point. I don't think it's within scope for this group to speak to that question. I think the translation and transliteration working group is going to speak to that question of who does or does not do translation and transliteration. I suppose if we end up discovering we have some advice about that we want to offer, we should certainly do that. But I don't feel that it's within scope for us to make a hard decision about that.
Okay.
Okay. So just quickly, once again, I was just sort of putting out there that with respect to names, organization and personal name itself, you know, the requirement should be that a registrant can enter their name in whatever is their local language or script in order to best represent their name.
Jim, this is Steve. I think with respect to name, it's sometimes even more challenging than the address itself because the level of accuracy it requires, right? Name, I mean, if we got the address slightly wrong, it might be acceptable. But if you got the name wrong, it's much harder. And also, for a name, it's very difficult to tell what language it is. You may be able to tell. You can probably tell a script just from the Unicode property, but it's very difficult to tell a language. So when you translate to, you don't know from where to translate to what. What language to translate to what language. So that's an added layer of issues. It's very similar for organizations. It's just usually they have official translations and we generally don't want to mess with it by, you know, using automated translation tools to translate, these organization names, where the official translation does exist. So just a couple of thoughts on that.
So thank you for that, Steve. With respect to the language and script issue, maybe we need to make this explicit because I'm realizing now perhaps it was just an assumption on my part, but I would expect that every data element would be appropriately tagged with a language and a script at all times. So it would be the responsibility of a registrar who's interacting with a registrant to know the language and script in use and to tag the data with that as part of its transference to the registry. And that information, of course, would need to be stored with the data element. Yes, I agree with you and make the observation that sometimes a script is used by only one language, and so it's pretty clear when you've got a set of characters what you're working with, but not always. You know, some scripts support multiple languages. And the opposite is also true. Sometimes a language is only supported by one script, but that's not always true. There are languages that can be supported by multiple different scripts. And so there are times when one or the other is sufficient, but it's usually best to always tag with both a script and a language just to be certain.
Hi, this is Nishit.
Please, Nishit, go ahead.
It's Spanish name. It's Spanish name. Sometimes it's hard to... Their Spanish name is in English or it's in Spanish. Where? Because they're using the same alphabet. It's hard to tag that to identify.
You don't tag it automatically. The tag is carried with the data.
So you're saying the registrant should submit that?
Well, presumably a registrar knows what they're working with when they're working with a registrant. You know, I mean, but yeah, somehow the registrar has to resolve with the registrant what the language and script is that's being used so that the data can be tagged that first time on input, and then that tag has to be carried around with the data, you know, throughout its life.
Okay.
So let me, Nishit wanted to talk, but maybe I'm interested in what our registrars, you know, think about that comment that I made, if that's reasonable or not. Give you a chance to think about that, but Nishit, please go ahead.
Mike, I want to ask one question that if a registrant is going to put some data in his local language, so are we allowing him to select different languages or script for different data elements, or the complete whose data should be in a single local language which is selected by a registrant?
So my answer would be that just depends on what services the registrar offers. I mean, I would consider it reasonable for a registrar to support multiple languages and scripts and give a registrant the option of selecting whatever works for them. I also think it's reasonable for a registrar to support exactly one language or script because maybe they only work in you only have business in one specific region or, you know, country or state or town, whatever, and they don't need any options.
No, my question is that if a registrant is going to register a domain name in his local language, will he be allowed to put the complete WHOIS information in one particular language, or will he be given an opportunity to put some data elements in one language and other in other language? As we are discussing that each data element will be tagged with a separate language and script.
Okay, I think I understand the question now. You're right, we're focused on requirements for categories of data elements, and you're asking the question, well, should all of these categories be in a single language or script, or will a registrant be able to use a different language or script for each separate category. So do I have the question correct?
Yes.
What do folks think?
So this is could open the door, for example, I could have a Chinese name, an Arabic address, you know, like, and some other script.
Sure, and then buy a Spanish domain name.
Oh boy.
Yes, I believe I heard Takao in the background there. He's
yes.
kind of quiet again.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So even like just the address within with just address itself, for instance, in Japanese, we put when I send the mail to Japan, I put everything in Japanese except the country name, which will be in English. So that right there kind of breaks the rule. And then that is practical way of, you know, putting address.
Yes, Takao, thank you for that. When we were talking about address, we had lots of examples of the fact that an address in particular could have multiple languages and scripts in use just as part of drafting the address and recording it. So we can't have a single language, single script requirement for the address data elements. So I guess you're right. So, okay, so the point you're making, Takao, is that given that that's true, you can't have a requirement on top of that that says that you need to use the same language or script throughout all categories of data elements.
Right.
So, Nisha, does that answer your question?
Yes, because I can see if we say that for a particular data element, mixed script or multiple script will be allowed. So I can see that we are creating problem for in case of validation and also in case of transliteration and translation. Because if we say that particular data element could be inserted in mixed script. I'll take an example like in, I could say that I can insert a particular data element in Devanagari as well as in, if I say it's in mixed script, I could insert it in Devanagari plus in Chinese. So isn't it create a problem for in case of validation and for transliteration and translation?
Well, you're asking if it creates a problem for translation, transliteration, and, of course, data validation. And I guess the answer is yes, it makes those problems harder. But I'm not sure that, you know, our job is to make the job easier for the consumers of the data. Maybe that's an interesting question. What's our scope to make it easy for the registrant or make it easy for the consumer?
You should consider both of them. Like I have suggested last time also that we could allow user to put, instead of saying it as a mixed script, we could say that user will be allowed to put in one his local language plus he could have optionally in English also. So in that case, we could cater to the input mechanism of addressing system.
So if I understand your suggestion, you're saying that rather than leaving it completely open-ended, where you could use as many languages or scripts as you might find necessary or interesting, we could say something like, for an address in particular, for a concrete example, there should be one language or script which covers most of the data, and you're allowed one other alternate language or script to use as needed to cover some additional information that might not be easily representable in your native language or script.
Yes, and that alternative language, I could suggest that it should be in it should be a lattice script, because in most of the examples we can see that user put in his native native, or I can say local language, plus sometimes he used to put in Latin characters also.
So the only concern that I have with specifying what that alternate language would be that we should be careful to coordinate and perhaps not overstep with what's going on in the translation and transliteration working group. Excuse me. One of the questions that they're going to answer is, should there be a common script, and if so, what should that be? So I would think that we might want to, I mean, we could consider having as a requirement that a registrant, you know, be able to use their local language or script plus whatever the common script is determined to be, if there is one, as opposed to trying to say what that is. Does that make sense to you, Nishit? Does that sound okay?
Yes.
But taking this a step back, we still have the question here of, do we want to limit the number of languages and scripts that can be used, or do we want to simply allow the registration process? Whatever the registrar supports and the registrant is willing to provide, they can have as many different languages or scripts in their registration information as they need or want.
I could say that if a registrant would be given a chance to select a language or language and script for a particular data element, if he select a particular language or script, he could be allowed to put the data in that particular language script only. Plus, additionally, we could allow to put in Latin script also along with that local language or script. This one is the suggestion.
So what I'm thinking through in my mind here is I'm trying to distinguish what you're suggesting, Nishit, with what we've already recorded. You know, we're saying that with respect to an address in particular, whatever language or script is used, it should be consistent with the region represented by the address. So it should be something which would be permitted by the region. The one thing we don't do is put a limit on the number of different languages or scripts that might be used as an address. But I would think that the region restriction would control that rather than leaving it completely open-ended. But what I think I understand you suggesting is that we should somehow put a limit on the number of languages or scripts that can be used. Do I understand correctly what you're asking for?
Yes.
Does anyone else want to comment on that?
Jim, it's about 1 minute to the top of the hour, and I have to go to get onto the next call.
Yeah. So, okay. So if you recorded that question, let's hold that question then.
Yeah.
And we'll pick that up next time. I want to suggest that we not meet for the next 2 weeks. If no one has any objections, next week is the Christmas holiday here in the U.S. and elsewhere. The following week is Wednesday, January 1st, so it's, you know, the first day of the new year. I'm both on vacation and on holiday. So if no one objects, I'd like to suggest that we not meet again until January 8th.
I'm fine with that.
So not hearing any objection, let's go forward with that, Steve. And in the interest of expediency, since you need to move on, let's just adjourn here. Wish people a happy holiday in whatever way that they choose to celebrate. And adjourn this call, and we'll pick up again on January 8th.
Thank you, Jim. We'll do that. One additional action item, I think probably for myself, is we already started to go into a lot of the data elements and such. I think it will be useful to document along the way.
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
To start writing about a outline of the first draft of the report, so that to make sure all of these key points are not missed, especially, you know, any requirements we come up, the justifications we need to provide to those requirements. So I'm just, as a note to myself, not to miss those, you know, in the actual reporting. So one action item that I'm thinking of taking on to start, like a first outline of the first draft of the report, if that's okay with the working group.
I think that would be fine. So starting to collect the notes that we're leaving behind in these note files and pulling them into a central location, I think that would be ideal.
Yeah.
So yes, please. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. With that, thank you for today's call. We will, resume on January 8th and wish everyone a happy holiday. And thank you so much. Bye-bye. Operator, could you stop the recording?